Region of Queens Council meeting for Tuesday, September 22nd at 9 a.m. is hereby called to order. I'd like to welcome everyone to council meeting today. I have potential regrets from Councilor Johnson this morning. He wasn't certain if he would be able to attend as of last evening. However, I don't see him present, so unless he shows up shortly, we'll accept his regrets for not being able to attend. I would ask that everyone in attendance please put your electronic devices on silent mode, if you would. And I would also like to notify everyone present that we are recording this meeting by video and audio. It is a very sensitive set of equipment, and therefore if you whisper to your neighbor, it may be on that recording and be able to be heard. Moving on to 2.0, changes, approval of agenda. I have nothing to add to the agenda this morning. Are there any additions to the agenda this morning? Councilor Fancy?
Yes, I'm just trying to think where I need to put it on here, but I'd like to talk about unsecured loans.
Unsecured loans. We can put it in as 9.2 under corporate services today.
Okay, thank you.
Any other additions? Yes, Councilor McLeod?
Yes, Your Worship. Last meeting we had a discussion in finance about the cost of living increase, potential increase, or whatever the decision was. And I'd like to add that again to the finance section. And I do not have the paperwork that was passed out by the finance director at last time, so I'm wondering whether we could get a copy of that again.
I don't know if it's relevant to your discussion today, but we can certainly add that discussion under 11.2.
Okay, thank you. We'll discuss it at that time. Thank you.
Okay. Any other? Hearing no additional additions to the agenda today, a motion to approve the agenda as amended would be in order. Moved by Councilor Frelick, seconded by Councilor Fancy. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion, please raise your hand. Thank you. It is unanimous. Under 3.0 presentations today, we have 3.1 Grant Thornton 2019-2020 audit report. And I understand that Kelsey Murphy is here from Grant Thornton. If you'd like to come forward to the presentation desk, please.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So as said, I'm Kelsey Murphy from Grant Thornton. Myself and Gloria Banks met yesterday with the audit committee and went through our report and the financial statements in detail. So today I'm going to provide more of a high-level summary of that, and if you do have any questions at any point, feel free to interrupt me. So we'll start with the consolidated financial statements. You will note that the package includes section A, B, and C. B is supplementary financial information, the non-consolidated statements. Those are not included in our audit opinion, nor are the trust funds. They do include an advisory to reader with each section, just to let everyone know that they are unaudited. Within these statements, you will also note that the independent auditor's report is not yet included. That we'll go through a little bit separately. It is only included once council approves the financial statements and we have appropriate signatures. So on page A4 is where we will start. This is the consolidated statement of financial position, which shows your financial assets, liabilities, and non-financial assets for the year. So one thing we like to point out, with under public sector accounting standards that the municipality or the region falls under, we report financial assets as what's liquid and what could be used to pay bills. And non-financial assets are items that are not easily convertible to cash. Majority of that balance is made up with tangible capital assets, so building, land, and other items that are used to provide services to the region. So under our financial assets, you will see that there's an increase in cash. So this year, the balance is a little over $20 million. Now, I'd like to point out that balance is made up of numerous items, some of which are restricted, and are reserves that are set up for specific and intended uses. Receivable balances are actually down this year. There is a note that describes that further. The good news is that taxes receivable is down the most, and an allowance has been able to be decreased because collections have become better. So that gives us total financial assets of $22 million. Under our liabilities, most of these items remain fairly consistent year over year. You will note an increase in long-term debt as there was a new debenture of $730,000 that was taken out during the year. And there was repayment on long-term debt a little over $300,000. There's also an increase in the solid waste closure and post-closure liability. So that item is a calculation of what it will cost to close and maintain the landfill site after it is closed for a number of years. So there is more detail on how that is calculated in note 11, but that liability will continue to increase as capacity is used in the cell. We then look at the total. So the total liabilities is $8.9 million, which gets to net financial assets of $13 million. It is a good news story that that is a positive and a fairly healthy balance. We do sometimes see that that is net debt because liabilities exceed assets. So because it is $13 million in the positive, it shows that the region is in a healthy financial position. We then have non-financial assets of $58 million. Again, I said the majority of that balance is capital assets, which is $58 million. This year, for fiscal 2020, we saw $1.8 million in capital additions and $2 million in amortization, which is recognizing the aging of those assets. That gets to an accumulated surplus of $71.8 million. We then move to A5, which is your statement of operations. It shows your revenue and expenditures for the year on a consolidated basis. We like to point that out because most of the time when you look at the budget, it is for the operating fund. And so we do have a note that reconciles the difference between the operating budget that was approved and the budget that is demonstrated here that is compliant with public sector accounting standards. We do add things like depreciation and eliminate transfers because transfers between funds do not show in your consolidation. So at the end of the day, taxation revenue increased quite significantly from the prior year. The majority of that is from an increase in residential taxes, which was $417,000 additional. $120,000 more than prior year for commercial, and it was a really good year for deed transfer tax, which saw an increase of $66,000 over the prior year. We also note an increase on other revenue from own sources, and that one I want to point out, it is higher than budget because interest income that is earned on the reserves is not budgeted in the operating fund or in the capital budget. So oftentimes, anything earned in those reserves will look as a surplus on your consolidated financial statements. And then we'll note that government transfers, capital contributions, is quite a large increase as well. That is a result of gas tax revenue. The federal government doubled their allotment for fiscal 2020, and that amount, again, is not budgeted because it is transferred directly into reserves and can only be used on restricted projects that are approved in advance. So that gives us total revenue of $20 million. We then look to expenditures. Again, majority of the expenditures are fairly consistent year over year. The one significant increase that we see is environmental health services. And that is a result mostly of an accounting adjustment relating to the landfill. So the difference in the landfill liability between fiscal 2018 and fiscal 2019 was actually that the liability went down. There was a new engineering report in 2019 that determined that future closure costs were lower than the last engineering report. So for that reason, there was a negative expense of $725,000 in the prior year. But this year, being a normal year with an increase, we saw a positive expenditure of $156,000, plus sludge removal was an additional cost that was not expected for $125,000. So those items all combined give us our year-over-year difference of about $1 million. Then at the end of the day, that gives us $18 million in expenditures for a consolidated surplus of $2 million. Okay. So that is our statement of operations. The following pages, the statement of cash flow and the statement of changes in net financial assets, really just provide readers with additional detail of how the cash balance changed, because these statements don't always show only cash items. Things like the change in the landfill liability and amortization, purchases of capital assets, those are not necessarily shown on your statement of operations, because a capital expenditure is not an expense on that statement. It's shown on your balance sheet only. So these following pages just give a little bit more detail as to how those numbers can be accounted for. The statements go on further to provide note disclosure regarding the decisions supporting some of the balances on the statement of financial position. But the main one that I want to point out is the final note, which is the subsequent event note, which relates to COVID-19. Obviously, COVID-19 has had a significant impact in the world and the environment around us. So we wanted note disclosure to allow readers to understand the impacts of the COVID-19 virus on the region for fiscal 2020. Now, the note goes on to detail and say that it has not had a big impact on fiscal 2020 because year end is March 31st. There was only a small period of time of impact. It's likely going to be more of an impact moving forward, and that from a timing or a cash flow perspective, there was deferral of when payments would be made for property taxes and things like that, but the region has sufficient reserves to mitigate the risks from any lost revenue sources or additional expenditures. And that will be continued to be monitored closely. So that's kind of my high level for the financial statements. The other item that I wanted to go through is the independent auditor's report. So for those that were here with us yesterday at audit committee, it is Appendix C. And if anyone does not have it, I did bring copies with. But our independent auditor's report really goes through to break down what our opinion is of the financial statements and everyone's roles and responsibilities. So the opinion, which is now the very first paragraph, is a clean audit opinion. We state, in our opinion, the accompanying consolidated financial statements present fairly, in all material respects, the financial position of the Region of Queens Municipality as at March 31st, 2020, and as results of operations, changes in net debt, and cash flows for the year then ended in accordance with Canadian Public Sector Accounting Standards. We then talk in the basis of opinion, how we came to that, indicating that we as auditors are responsible to audit in accordance with our own standards. And the one to highlight, again, as I mentioned earlier, other matters, supplementary financial information. Our audit report indicates that Section B and Section C are supplementary and therefore are not audited specifically. We would take them into consideration when auditing the consolidation as a whole, but we do not offer an opinion on those separate sections. We then go through and list the responsibilities of management and those charged with governance over the financial statements, followed by the auditor's responsibilities, which really defines that we use the concept of materiality, and we feel that the statements are free from material misstatement. But it also goes on to define that we don't audit the financial statements for fraud, and that there is always a risk that that item could go undetected. So that is the majority of our audit report. Does anyone have any questions or anything that you want me to go through in more detail?
Any questions of councillors? Councillor Fancy?
I just wanted to state that we articulate very well, so it was easy to understand as best we could. And thank you for it.
Thank you.
Any other counselor? Well, hearing none, I want to thank you, Kelsey, for your presentation today, and certainly the presentation yesterday to the audit committee was very helpful, and as mentioned, a lot of questions asked and answers given, so it's very appreciative. Today, later in council meeting, we will have another item regarding our audit.
Yep.
So did you have any other comments you wanted to leave with us?
No, just thank you for having us today and for all of the questions. It is good to show that you're engaged and you're trying to understand. I know that public sector standards often have different looking statements than others might be used to, so I appreciate the questions.
Thank you for presenting today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Grant Thornton, for all the work.
Thank you.
So at this point, I would like to note that Councillor Johnson is not present, and I think that would allow Councillor Fisk to take that chair. And I would ask the CAO if he'd return to the chair at the front. Thank you, Jim.
We did a good job.
Demoted.
You demoted me.
Moving on to 4.0, tabling of petitions. We have no petitions to table today. Are there any petitions to table today? Second call for petitions. Third and final call for petitions. We have no petitions today. That brings us to 5.0, public question comment session, and this is an opportunity for members of the public to speak to council. And I would ask that you please state your name and your address and use the microphone and direct your comments to myself as chair, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Leon Robinson, College Street in Liverpool. First of all, I'd like to compliment your staff with the finishing of the project on Jubilee Street. It looks very nice. It looks like it's a great job that's been done there. Thank you. And also, it's good to see from the financial statements there and so on, that you have a surplus, and looks like it's the finances are in good hands. Now, the other thing, which is I think appropriate for today, is EMO. With the pending storm, or the storm that has started here now, I was wondering if you could give us just a bit of an update there with respect to what EMO has in place and so on. I noticed from on the computer and so on, a lot of people seem to be in the dark in the fact that they don't know what the procedure is and so on with respect to where compensations may be. And I know it's your responsibility to declare a state of emergency if that's necessary. Is that correct?
It is, although under the provincial state of emergency, that is more the minister's responsibility at this point due to COVID and their state of emergency. But to answer your question more fully, our EMO committee for Region of Queens has been in constant contact with Halifax EMO. Our staff have been checking catch basin covers to make sure that they're clear. They've been putting items away that may be movable or blow around. They've been taking the precautions to, of course, not only protect municipal infrastructure, but to ensure that anything does not blow that would be unfastened away and damage others. They will be looking at the parking lot, should we have a surge tide, to control traffic there. And EMO has been reaching out to the emergency service providers in Queens, as they normally do ahead of a storm, and will continue to do so. And this has been an issue that EMO has been looking at since at least the end of last week. So as far as comfort centers would go, you know the procedure on comfort centers. Unless there's a need for one, they're not requested to be opened by our EMO committee. And there is a requirement for all citizens, every storm, to be prepared for 72 hours to hunker down and to not proceed outdoors in heavy wind and storm where there is a risk of trees falling on them. So when it is safe to travel, there would be an advisory put out by the Region of Queens, and it would go on media sources such as the radio channels, our Facebook, our website, other means to get it out to the residents.
But if we have no power sort of thing, then we wouldn't be able to get the information. Is that
in your package for 72 hours of preparedness? There's a requirement there to state that all residents should have a battery-powered radio, so you're able to get that information.
Be able to stay at home, you're saying?
For the first period of time until it's safe or there is a need for a conference center, we would not be advising that people be out on the road if the storm gets to that level.
Has the EMO coordinator, Brian, he's brought you up to date then recently about this storm?
Brian Hatt was dealing with these issues yesterday.
Okay, so, and I noticed there on the Facebook there that Greenfield Fire Department put a statement on there that they were available if they were needed.
And all of those emergency providers and fire stations can put out their own information, and certainly if they're prepared to do that, they're able to do so.
So, within that 72 hours, then everybody is supposed to stay at home and not go to a comfort station. Is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm saying is there may be a need to stay home for up to 72 hours, and you should be prepared for that period of time. If there is a need on day two, then certainly the region would request that residents who need to go to a comfort center, if there's one set up, which I expect there would be if there's a need, where it would be and how to get there and those issues.
My point is how do you find out that information if the power's been on?
Again, I'll bring you back to your radio with batteries. That will be on the radio stations. That will be available to individuals in the community. And I guess, Leon, the real catch-22 to this is in the past, people are out looking for comfort centers that aren't open and perhaps shouldn't be on the road at that point in time early in the storm. And it is a safety concern, and that's an EMO directive across Nova Scotia.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Any other member of the gallery would like to speak today? Well, hearing none, I thank you. And we will move on to 6.0, approval of minutes, which would be 6.1, the minutes for the regular council meeting of September 8th, 2020. Are there any errors or omissions in those minutes that have been circulated? Hearing none, a motion to approve those minutes that circulated would be in order. Moved by Councillor Fisk, seconded by Councillor Nunes. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. We have nothing today under 7.0, dangerous or unsightly premises. We have nothing today under 8.0, economic development. Under 9.0, corporate services, we have 9.1, a motion of reconsideration, request to Nova Scotia Department of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal. And Councillor Fancy had requested that be added to the agenda. Would you like to move that, Councillor Fancy?
Yes. I must say, too, I forgot my glasses, so if I say some word in there that sounds silly, just let me know.
And who would like to second that?
You want me to read it first?
No. I guess you can. Go ahead.
I so move that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality reconsider the motion lost at the May 26, 2020 Council meeting, which reads as follows. And that the Region of Queens Municipality make contact with Department of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal to include exit to Highway 8 is at the set of lights.
Seconder to that? Councillor McLeod? Any discussion on the motion? Councillor Fancy?
Yes. So what had taken place is when we put up the new signage to say there was no exit to Highway 8, the signage is put down the road. So what happens is that people come just as a follow-up of why we got to this place in the first place. There was the big green sign up by the highway says that exit to Caledonia Kedji, and it's got arrows. And for people traveling, they're seeing it, but supposed to be exit right, so the first road they come to before the lights is Old Falls Road. So a lot of people are taking that exit to go down there, thinking they're going to Kedgy, and then there's they see the signage, and then they start to turn in someone's driveway. And the person's got a sign up now saying, children present, please do not turn in my driveway. So what we wanted to do is to make an addition to that signage out there saying exit at lights. So then people will know that they aren't supposed to go to the next road, but they exit at the lights. The sign itself is getting rotten, so hopefully the PIR will replace the whole thing and make a sign with that in place. And what we got to hear is because we had made a motion of that, but was defeated because maybe people didn't realize how bad it was going to get. But it's not a good situation right now.
Okay, thank you, Councilor Fancy. Any other councilor would like to speak on this motion? Councilor McLeod?
I would like to repeat what Councilor Fancy has said. Situation with Old Falls Road is the municipality placed a sign on a post saying no exit to Route 8. However, it's positioned such that the vehicles are on the street before they actually notice the sign, or sometimes they drive right by it and don't notice it at all. And there's been a lot of traffic going up through there. Not so much now, but when Queen's Place gets back into full operation, a lot of those folks leaving from there want to avoid the lights, so they're taking that route to exit onto number 8. But there had been some discussions about, and a report given to council, about possibly making it a...
Councilor McLeod?
Yeah.
I think we're stirring away from the signage issue of reconsideration.
Well, I just wanted to explain why the signage could be better placed.
And we're not talking about the other signs. We're talking about the one sign in this motion. So I'd ask you to keep your discussion and comments relative to the motion itself.
Well, I'm just saying the explanation for folks that had not known what was discussed prior to this. So going back to my explanation, so we felt that a sign would be better on the Department of Transportation sign, which could say something like exit to 8 is at the set of lights, or a better wording that would really clarify to try to resolve the issue of traffic going through there. Very narrow street. This motion was defeated at the last time, and we wanted to bring it forward to consideration because certain conditions have happened since then. The RCMP have patrolled that area just recently, and they issued some tickets, and they issued some warnings. So that lets us know that other signage is not working.
Any other councilor have a comment today? Councilor Fancy, do you have any last comments on this?
No, that's fine. Thank you.
CAO, this requires a 2/3 majority to pass, does it?
It does. I'll just get my calculator out to see how many people that is.
Or we split the people.
I'm just wondering, since the last sign has gone in, whether there's been any change other than what you're seeing because of the people exiting. I just would like an update on what's happening there. You said the RCMP was in. Did that sign make a difference? And will this one, in addition, solve the problem?
We don't monitor the activities of the RCMP, and we don't monitor the activity of traffic on various roadways, and we have no way of knowing that other than if the RCMP report that they're issuing tickets or something like that. Sometimes they let us know, or if they're doing proactive patrols on that road, they may let us know. Clearly, we're not aware of the activities of the RCMP, and we don't keep track of the traveling movements of vehicles on our roads. So we have no way of knowing.
My understanding is that there's a sign now at the end of Old Falls Road that says no exit, but there's not a no exit sign going on to number 8. So it's the council. perhaps our fifth time fancy. Clarify that.
All the
Council Fancy?
Sorry. They did move the 30-kilometer sign up toward the end of the road, and then they put no exit to Highway 8 up there. That's the only two signage changes that they did. And talking to people on Old Falls Road, it hasn't slowed the traffic down, that people are still going through. And so I had actually spoken with the RCMP if they could be able to just monitor that, they have to try to get some warnings out to try to let people know that this is there. And so I guess they followed up on that. The other, and I don't know, no, I don't think they haven't put anything out by the highway. They probably should have done there too.
So right now you have a 30 mile kilometers per hour.
Yes.
It's not enforceable.
No, that's right.
You have a sign at the end that is not enforceable because there's not another follow-up sign at the other end. And we want to add another sign, but yet the problem is still there.
Councilor Frelick, could you wait just a minute?
Just to clarify, there is a sign at the beginning of the road that was requested by council, specifically the wording says no exit on the Highway 8.
Right.
So that sign is there.
But unenforceable.
What's unenforceable?
That would be a decision of the courts.
The RCMP have issued tickets for those that have been entering Route 8 from Old Falls Road.
They have been.
They have been.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Even though they don't have a sign at by number 8. Okay.
There is a sign at number 8 says no exit.
You can't go from Route 8 up Old Falls Road from that end. It says no entrance.
Coming into Old Falls Road from
yes.
Number 8, not exiting. Right.
But to get on Old Falls Road, you have to go by that sign that says no throughfare to Route 8. So one would assume that anyone driving through there would see that sign.
Right.
So this is to prevent those individuals that would be coming through and see the sign and think they can go to Kedgy and go that way. So.
I understand the reason for this. What I'm not understanding, or that I guess I do understand, is that it's still not working.
Correct.
So we're going to add another sign to a situation that's not working.
That would be the decision of council today.
Thank you.
Deputy Mayor Kelly?
I just want to clarify, we're just, the motion today is just to ask TIR, make contact with TIR to include no exit or exit to Highway 8 is at the lights. Do we know if that is even within their guidelines for signage, if they would do that? We have no way of knowing that they would actually include that just because we asked for it. So it may not be possible from their standpoint. Is that correct?
CAO?
I would assume that's correct. We've done no research to determine what TIR's sign policies are at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Councilor Fancy?
I didn't ask directly with this, but I know I've asked for other signage, and if they don't have signage, they don't make up signage. Put it that way. Now, I have seen on things where it says no exit, so it is in other things. So if, say, exit to a high, at lights, I guess that's the whole idea. Is this what this whole motion is? We're going to a request. We're not telling TIR. We're making a request to them anyway, right? That's all we're doing here today is making a request to them.
And the answer may come back yes or no.
That's right.
Councilor Fisk?
I had my hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll go to Councilor McLeod first.
The issue is, there is an issue. People are going through that street. We had a petition presented by the residents on that street, and I think there has to be some consideration for that. Signage isn't just the resolution. I mean, that we had talked about putting a cul-de-sac or barricades or whatever at the end of the street. Once people get to the end of the street, they're only going to do it once if they know that they can't exit onto Highway number 8. So there has to be a resolution, whether it's signage or some other type of effort to resolve the problem of people that are not residents on that street. And there's a lot of speed because they get to the point and they go up the hill faster. And that was the reason for having the 30-kilometer sign put there, just to have them pay attention to the narrowness of that street. But I feel that there should be some resolution and not just leave this hanging and come back at it again.
Any other councillor have a question or comment on this? Councillor Fisk?
I feel very strongly that to add another sign won't help the matter whatsoever. I think people are going to still use that road, and a lot of people I've talked to question me about the road. They're totally upset because it is signage there now. Putting a sign up directly into the lights won't help one bit. That's my opinion.
Councilor Frilly?
Does the region have the ability to do our own signs should EIR refuse this?
CAO?
Within the bounds of Liverpool, yes.
Why wouldn't we just that seems like a easier solution rather than go through the TIR roundabout?
That is a motion of council that staff will implement. It hasn't been the motion of council to date. The motion of council has been to erect a 30-kilometer sign to put the no exit to Highway 8 sign, and there's a third sign there, I believe. So staff have done what motions of council have been.
Okay. But we still haven't solved the problem, so.
Keep in mind that there is one large sign there now, and adding a sign to that may be easier than trying to erect another sign and maintain visibility of both signs.
I understand that, but Councillor Fancy just said that he's not even sure whether TIR will do this unless they have an existing sign. Clearly, they wouldn't have this existing sign, so can we move it forward faster by having the region look at it?
That's not the motion before us.
I understand that, but you could amend the motion. If
there are many options available down the road if this one does not pass. However, that's the one in front of you today.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comment today on this issue? Councilor McLeod?
So an amendment can be made to this motion? No?
No.
It has to come back at another time. Is that what you're saying?
I don't think this can ever come back again. Doesn't go through today.
So
we only have one kick of the can at a reconsideration.
Okay, then maybe I misunderstood. You mentioned the word amendment, so how can that fit into this?
Amendment to.
Did you mention about an amendment?
That was me.
I didn't understand
that you couldn't amend
this. Any other comments on this item before us? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? Those opposed? We have 6-1. It is passed. Moving on to 9.2 on secured loads. Councillor Fancy, you would ask that this one go on.
Okay. Why I want to bring this up today in particular is that we've had meetings. We're going to have meetings on our plan here and how we what we do with the region with waste and all the problems we have with littering and everything else. Which littering isn't ours. Ours is illegal dumping. As we know how the county is, we know if it's. It's frustrating for everyone with everything that goes on. But I had an incident on Saturday where someone called me up and they were following behind a half-ton truck out to the landfill from Liverpool. Bag fell off the truck, hit on the road, smashed. They almost hit it, and they stopped, took the bag off the road, but glass was laying all over the road everywhere. And they had to call somebody else to come pick up the glass and move that off. They said, what do I do? What do we do? Do we call the RCMP? What do we do? I said, I don't really know. I said, RCMP would be the most logical thing to do. So I called up the landfill and I said, what's going on there? Because it was truck going over to just bag the garbage on the back. They said that when they get out there, of course, that we got a sign up there that says they must be tarped. And we say that, you must tarp that. The message isn't getting through for whatever it may be. So we're finding more and more in the ditch that things are coming off. And first off, our sign you took there saying tarp is not right. Because if you've got limbs and things on your car, it's going to be hard to put a tarp over a limb. You can take rope and tie it all down. So it should be saying be secured, not tarped. Because secured means different things in different ways. Tarp isn't the whole answer to what it should be. So I look at that and I say, first off, the signage, it doesn't work the way it's set up. How we're enforcing it, and we're trying the best, we're trying to say you need to secure your loads, but people don't seem to be abiding by it. I think that we need to be looking at trying to write some warnings, so something that has more power, or more punch. And I know it's hard because they're coming from the highway, and we have nothing to do with the highway. All we have to do is with what's landing there when it lands on our property. So it's a concern that alone, not just trying to look at the litter and everything as a whole, but just the unsecured load aspect of it. People are doing this every Saturday in particular. I see them go there all the time, going through with nothing on them. The people just doing a one-time thing, going out to get rid of the garbage. We need to have this one area in particular. I mean, this could have been an accident. Could have been a bad scene. What if she would have drove around it? What if somebody else would have drove over it? You know, all this glass and things. So I think it's getting to a point where that's why I wanted to bring it here today in particular. Not just this unsecured, but the safety aspect of we need to. I know we have a meetings coming up with our groups again about the how we're going to handle everything with litter and garbage and everything. And we will go through all those things, but this one here in particular is this concern what happened on Saturday. Do they call RCMP? Do we call the landfill? You know, how do we approach these things? We need to get these things down so everybody knows.
Councillor Fancy, as you've mentioned, there is an effort of councillors and staff and those outside providers such as the RCMP and TIR and those others that have responsibilities for litter and such. And I know that all involved, including yourself, will try to arrive at solutions to remedy prevention for the item that you've actually stated today. I would encourage you to bring up those items in that committee and work towards solutions. And I would defer to the CAO. He may have some comments on this as we move forward.
Just that we've talked about the issue many times, and if Councillor Fancy has a particular recommendation or something for council to consider, then bring it forward for discussion either at council floor or at the ad hoc committee that's been formed to talk about litter. But unless there's some direction to staff, then there's not a lot we can do. And really, anything that any safety issues on the highway are RCMP issues.
Absolutely.
Councillor McLeod?
This isn't a question, but it's just a comment respecting the topic. There have been some advertisements placed by a municipality in the papers. I think I saw it in South Shore Breaker about unsecured loads and that sort of thing. So getting the message out to the public in whatever form we can is important because that also is a good way to get the message out. And I thank Councillor Fancy for bringing the topic up today. I know there's a discussion about it and there's no motions. But now that we are being recorded and our audio and that sort of thing has improved a bit, getting those messages out in any fashion is a good thing to do.
Thank you, Councillor McLeod. Any other councillor? Oh, Councillor Fancy, you have any parting comments on this one?
No, I could be saying looking forward for the recommendation in for next council meeting, but I think I'll defer that to our meetings with our group, with the council, and then we can be able to put all motions together. But as Councilor McLeod said, I wanted to get it out here as much as anything else concerning the public. And maybe people get more aware of it and maybe be thinking of that Saturday cleanup, because they'd be able to make sure that they make it safe for everybody else on the highway.
Thank you, Councilor Fancy. That sounds like a reasonable approach. And we'll meet with success. It will come. Moving on to 10.0, Engineering and Public Works, we have nothing there today. Under 11.0, Finance, we have 11.1, Adoption of Audited 2019-2020 Financial Statements. And a copy will be available to the public upon adoption and signing. I would ask Jennifer Keating Hubley, our Director of Finance, is not here at this point in time. I believe Jenny went to get her. I would like to move the recommendation. Councilor Frelick?
I so move that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality adopt the audited financial statements and the trust fund financial statements for the fiscal year ending March 31st, 2020, as presented by Grant Thornton.
Seconder to that? Councilor Muse? Would our Director of Finance be coming? We'll just pause for a minute.
When do we appoint the auditors for the next term, or has that already been done?
CAO, what's the frequency of that?
It's usually every couple of years, but it's
okay, thank you.
On the phone, sorry.
Director of Finance Jennifer Keating Hubley is now in the presentation chair. And Jennifer, we have moved and seconded the adoption of the audited financial statements. And now we're to a point where if you have any comments you'd like to provide us at this point.
I was pleased with the information provided by Grant Thornton in the overview. My staff did a wonderful job this year of providing all the recommended verifications. Everyone was really quick to answer their questions and provide all the information and the samples and documentation that they needed to complete their audit this year. So I think it went rather smoothly considering we were remote and everything had to be scanned and sent to them via a secure site. So it worked well. It was different, but it worked. It went smooth.
Great, thank you. Any questions of Jennifer by councilors? Councilor McLeod?
I just had the question before you came in the room, Jennifer. How often are the auditors appointed for? Every 2 years?
This one was actually a 3-year appointment. So this was their second year, and they will be providing the audited services next year as well.
Any other questions of councilors? Councilor Fancy?
I did notice something they said yesterday. They said they do an audit on the whole thing, but in different sections they do not audit as per se. They do like grab samples of things rather than.
So their audit consists of the consolidated statements, so a combination of all of our departments and all of our resources, The non-consolidated statements, they do consider non-audited. Those are reviewed, though, because those provide all of the backup information that's required to fully verify the consolidated statements.
And they get answered anyway on the, when it comes out into the main page.
Exactly.
So you're okay.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you very much. Thank you, Jennifer.
Wonderful.
That brings us to 11.2, staff recommendation raised. Councilor McLeod had asked for this to be on the agenda. Councilor McLeod?
Yes, at the last meeting we had a discussion about the cost of living recommendation, or the cost of living adjustment. And from reading the audio video of that meeting, there was a direction by yourself, Mayor Dagley, for our Director of Finance to come back with a recommendation. And I don't see that on our agenda today, so I was just wondering if that was deferred or not.
So to respond to that, my memory of the last council meeting was that it was stated that the Director of Finance could bring back a recommendation if it were so decided. It was not decided to bring it back for a number of reasons. And of course, the major reason being that the policy procedure that we have for staff increases according to the Nova Scotia Consumer Price Index increase was minus 0.5 this year. And we do not recover monies from salaried individuals in the region of Queens under that situation. We do, however, if there is an increase in the Nova Scotia CPI, the policy procedure automatically recommends to council the amount of that increase. There was no increase, so therefore there is no staff recommendation for an increase.
But are council available to, are they able to make a recommendation without finance department's suggestion?
Council is able to do so, but it would not be following the policy and procedure that's in place for that to occur on a regular basis. If there's an increase in the consumer price index, one would need to keep into consideration that if the economy had slowed this year, one would expect that there's a likelihood that next year it will increase, and any increase that would be provided this year in a decrease would be offset again next year with an increase. And one can't predict the future, but those policies and procedures are there to be consistent. And of course, as you asked, yes, council can intercede. Is it appropriate? Well, that's up to council to decide.
So policies and procedures. Procedures is a suggestion, but policies, we have to stay within the policies.
So I'm going to defer to our CAO to clarify that
just
better.
Get clarification.
They are one and the same. It's just different terminology. So a motion of council is a policy of council. A procedure of council is a policy of council. A formal policy in the policy book of council is a policy of council. So we use different terminologies for different things, but since they're all policies of council.
So there was never a recommendation that was there was no recommendation at all on the cost of living, and it was just a discussion that we had.
We had a discussion last meeting because staff were unable to put forward a recommendation for a motion due to the decrease in the Nova Scotia Consumer Price Index. And that was stated in that presentation last council meeting.
Yes, I realize that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Councilor Fancy?
Yeah, I think our CAO did explain it somewhat in that you don't want to feel like you're doing your staff wrong. Now that's the whole thing. You don't want to do our staff wrong. But if I'm correct in you saying, I think a few years back, like you had a 2.8 when instead of a 2.0. So sometimes you go more, and so you gain when you gain, you lose when you lose, so to speak. You go, if you keep on the same path of the CPI and saying that it's going to level out, so that doesn't take a beating too.
Any other councilor have a comment on this issue? I'll come back to Councilor McLeod.
Okay. So there, to make a recommendation now, and the 48-hour notice is not applicable to this since it was mentioned.
No, Councilor McLeod, a 48-hour notice of a substantive motion is still required, and you would not be able to make a motion on a monetary issue today.
However, the last meeting, it was stated that we possibly could have a recommendation. So wouldn't that be a motion?
No, it would have to be in the agenda package that was sent out on Thursday. Okay. Any other comments on this item today? Hearing none, thank you all for your conversation today on this item. We will move on now to 12.0, Recreation and Healthy Communities. We have nothing under that today. Under 13.0, Planning, we have 13.1. Amend land use bylaw to rezone bid 701-54695/969258, Caledonia. And I should note that Councilor Hughes was not present last night, so he's unable to participate in the discussion of this issue today. Our Director of Planning, Mr. Cloud, is now at the desk. We have a recommendation, I do believe.
Yeah.
Under 13.1, under this issue, we would like to move that. Now, Deputy Mayor Kelly?
I recommend that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality give second reading to a bylaw respecting amendments to the land use bylaw, which sees the rezoning of PID number 701-54695 from industrial institutional I-1 to highway commercial C-2.
Seconder to that motion, Councilor Fraley. Mike, would you like to give us an update on this item?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, as a brief background, as you're all aware, the region is in the process of trying to sell the property at 9692 Highway in Caledonia. Most will recognize this as the former school bus garage for North Queens. Currently, the region has a pending offer on the property from an individual who wishes to operate a apple cider production business at that location. So this is a condition of sale that the property be appropriately zoned to allow for this use. So right now, as all school properties are zoned, there's an institutional I-1 land use zoning designation on the property as well. The property carries with it a future land use of institutional. So the use being proposed by the prospective purchaser would fall under the category of a microbrewery under the definition section in the land use bylaw. And this is a use that would be considered under the highway commercial C2 zone. So in order to enable this operation to run on this property, rezoning of the property to the highway commercial C2 zone would be required. Policy 12.5.2 of the Municipal Planning Strategy outlines the things that council takes into consideration when looking at amendments to the land use bylaw, and that's included in the staff report. So the property itself, it's a 5.6 acre parcel of land, which is a fairly considerable size parcel for, I guess, the downtown Caledonia core area. There is a 3,900 square foot commercial building located on the property, constructed around the mid 80s. Up until a couple of years ago, the property was maintained by the school board for operation of a bus garage. But when that property became redundant for use as a school bus garage, the property was turned back to the municipality. So since that time, the property has been vacant, and we've had it listed through real estate for sale. So in order to consider the proposed use on that property, a rezoning to the highway commercial C2 would be required.
Thank you, Mike. Are there any questions of Mike, of council, or any comments? Counselor Pansy?
I should just also say too is that when we look at the recommendation, we know what we're going to be changing to zoning, and we hear what he wants to do with it. It's not always that they are held to doing what they're, except for the zoning change, they can, because I keep hearing, well, they're going to do this, it's great for Calvin, and it's great if he goes that way, but it doesn't mean he has to use that. He's not taken into that to say that's what he's got to do.
That's correct.
That's
correct, Counselor.
The other is only just language that goes along with it.
Yeah, I guess the microbrewery is one of the permitted uses within
right.
in the C2.
Right.
I guess in looking at the sale of the property and whether it was this purchaser or somebody else, the current zoning as institutional is
right.
is quite limited, and the future use of that property is certainly limited, and potential
right.
purchasers as well. So at some point in time, whether it was this purchaser or somebody else, we would likely have been required to rezone that anyway to allow for different types of uses. So, but you're correct.
Yes. Councilor Pinson.
I also just want to make a comment here. I'd like to commend the region for doing something with the sound system, because Mike isn't really a loud speaker, but I can hear him very plainly. So it's really a lot better.
And the other councillor, Councillor Fisk?
I just want to say that I was through the hearing last night, and I really appreciate the involvement of the Caledonia people and around the area. And I think it's one of the greatest moves that happened in Caledonia at the time.
Thank you, Councillor Fisk. Any other councillor? Councillor McLeod?
The purchaser of the property certainly should be commended for bringing that to a small area such as Caledonia. Caledonia is a hub of the North Queens area, and with the trying to have the program or the project, the Gateway, that is the Gateway project, that certainly, this type of business certainly adds to that,
mm-hmm.
and is also potential employment in the area. So, I mean, this is just the beginning of what can happen with that facility, with that building, and with the vision that the new owners have for that.
Mm-hmm.
Any other councillor? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous of those that are permitted to vote.